Let's turn to God's Word, to the passage you read, Esther. We're going to look at chapters 9 and 10. We didn't read the first 20 verses, but we will be looking at them. I think that many of us here, thank you, would agree that we live in confusing times. And we've just been singing about God speaking to us, and we want Him to speak. And we don't want to be confused. But this book is a little bit confusing, in one sense. If you and I were writing the Bible, I'm not sure we would have included something like this. Why? Because it's a book that doesn't mention God. And that does seem really strange. It doesn't neatly fit into a formula. A lot of times, I think what we as Christians do is we have formulas for how we present the gospel. Or we have methods. And I think this is something different. I think that what's here is this book is shot through with God, but they are so confident they don't need to mention. Now, let me explain it this way. If you're married and you're sitting here, you're male, and you have a T-shirt that says, "I love my wife," I'm questioning your relationship, that you actually need to do that. And a lot of times as Christians, we think, well, I've only borne witness if I've said the three R's, or if I've mentioned the name of Jesus, or if I brought God into it. You know, sometimes it's what underlies your life that communicates and carries through. And I think that's what's happening here in this book. I think also that for some of us, we've come here, you've come here, it's coming towards Christmas and you're wondering where God is or what God has to do with it. It's like the lady who went into a bookshop to buy a gift for Christmas and she noticed there was a book about Jesus. And she was a bit horrified and she said, "That's ridiculous, they're even bringing religion into Christmas." Well, there are people who think like that. It's got nothing to do. It's all about Santa. It's all about different things. But it is a celebration. It's a celebration of the birth of Jesus. But many of us do not feel like it's a time for celebrating. It's kind of strange how we feel. I can't get round my head at all that this is Christmas. There's sunshine. And I haven't heard Christmas songs everywhere. You know, this just does not feel like Christmas at all. Christmas should be dark and miserable, and then there should be lights, and you know, you should have endless Christmas songs everywhere, and it's just not like that here. Some ways that's good, some ways it's not so good. But I know a lot of people for whom Christmas is not a time of celebration. And for the Jewish people in the United Kingdom, up until a couple of days ago, not that they would have celebrated Christmas, but they must have dreaded the end of the year. Britain's chief rabbi, Ephraim Mirvis, wrote in the Times just a few weeks before we go to the polls, "The overwhelming majority of British Jews are gripped by anxiety. The question I'm now most frequently asked is, what will become of Jews and Judaism in Britain if the Labour Party forms the next government?" Now, I'm not making a political point, but I'm just asking you to try and consider what it must feel like to be part of a people who dread a government coming to power. And that's what happened in Esther's day. There was a man called Haman, and he basically decreed genocide for the Jews. And they must have been so confused. They were God's people. Their Jerusalem had been invaded and destroyed, and they were about to be destroyed. It must have been the most distressing and worrying of time. Just think even of how you feel. Imagine I know that there were people in Sydney that when the smoke all came over, people felt apocalyptic is the word, is how it describes. Well, imagine you're living beside one of the massive fires and your property's in danger. How you feel about that. Well, the Jews felt that. And by the way, we do need to reflect a lot on why the Jewish people are so hated, and they have been from this time up until the present day. In fact, one of the great questions that many people ask is, if the Jews were God's people, then why the Holocaust? Well, maybe we'll return to that. But one of the things I will say is this, that the French philosopher, theologian, Pascal, said this in his Pensées, one of the greatest proofs for the existence of God is the continuing survival of the Jewish people. Well, we'll come back to that, but in this passage, there are 3 days, I think, that are mentioned. One is a day of reversal. The first few verses talk about how the tables were turned. This was a day of justice. The Jews would have faced the Holocaust then. But instead, Haman was killed, his children, his sons were killed, and there was bloodshed. There were 500 of his men killed in the citadel of Susa, and then 75,000, which works at about 500-600 men in each of the provinces of that vast empire. And Queen Esther, she was ruthless. You know, they say about women leaders. Well, she was a women leader. She really was a leader, and she was ruthless in that. And some people would say, well, was that a good thing? Was it not a bad thing? And the answer is no. And someone earlier this morning gave me a helpful illustration. You think of the Rwandan genocide. And imagine if the Hutus had been told, you're about to be slaughtered, but you can prevent, you can kill those who are going to slaughter you. You can't slaughter them. You can't do tit for tat, but you can prevent the killers. And imagine if instead of 2 million or 3 million people being killed, it had been 75,000, as was here. Verse 10 and verse 15 and verse 16 says they did not lay their hands on the plunder. And that's very important because it's saying that the Jewish people were being held to a higher ethical standard. Because in war, what often happens in war is it's an excuse for greed. You take over someone's country, you take over someone's home, and you kill them. And then you take their property. The plunder of war is a phrase that was used. But the Jews were told, you don't do that. They weren't allowed to make personal profit out of war. They were held to a higher moral standard. From a Christian perspective, we remember what Paul says to the Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians 1, 6 and 7. God is just. He will pay back trouble to those who trouble you and give relief to you who are troubled. This, for me, is an extremely important thing in a confusing world. They don't get away with it. There is a day of justice. There are people who have power and they abuse that power. The vast majority of sexual abuse, for example, occurs within homes where there is someone, usually the father figure, who's not behaving like a father and who has power and abuses that power and thinks they will get away with it. There are gangsters who think they will get away with it because they have power. There are politicians who think they will get away with it because they have power. But there is a day of justice coming when God will judge the world by the man he has appointed, Christ Jesus. There's a film I love called Das Untergang, The Downfall. And it's a German film about the last days of Hitler in the bunker. And it caused a great deal of fuss in Germany because it portrayed Hitler as a human being who liked dogs and cared for women. And people didn't like that. They wanted Hitler to be a monster. He was a monster, but he's a human monster. And one of the most incredible scenes in that in dialogue is at the end when he's just married his mistress, Eva Braun, and he's getting ready to commit suicide to avoid the justice of the Russians. He says, I am thankful, I will go to peace. No, you won't. That's not how justice operates. That's not how this world is. It's funny, people say, I don't want to believe in a God of justice. I don't want to believe in a God who judges. Well, what you're really saying is, you want a world in which the Hitlers of this world can get away with it. They can't, ever. The reason Stalin murdered so many people was at age 14, he decided after reading Darwin's Origin of the Species that there is no God. And if he had absolute power, he could do whatever he wanted, and he wasn't going to answer to that God. Well, this passage teaches us there is a day of judgment coming. But it's also Remembrance Day, verse 17. This happened on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th they rested and made it a day of feasting and joy. Festivals are important. The Jews had 2 major festivals, the Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles. And now there's Purim that's added. It's still being celebrated today. I mean, this is amazing that this story that we look at is celebrated. I think next year it's on March the 19th and 20th. And it will be celebrated by Jewish people in this city, Jewish people in Africa, Jewish people in Israel, in New York, and elsewhere. And I looked at a Jewish Purim guide, if you like, and I thought it was quite interesting, some of the comparisons you might want to make with Christmas. There are several common practices on Purim. We give gifts to poor people. We read the Megillah, the Purim story. We eat a festive meal, or Suda. We give food gifts called Mishla Manot to our friends. We eat Haman Tashin, triangle-shaped cookies named for the villainous Haman. We have readings on the Sabbath before, which are about giving money to the poor. On the 13th of the month, we fast, the day before, if you like, Christmas, we fast. And I thought this was interesting. It includes abstention from eating, drinking, washing, and engaging in sexual activity, and the wearing of leather shoes. They fast from wearing leather shoes. And some of you seem to fast from wearing leather shoes quite a lot. I just thought that was fascinating. And then at the conclusion of the fast, basically Christmas Eve, the book of Esther is read out in its entirety, preceded by the pronouncements of three blessings that praise God for his miraculous deed. And the last blessing is this, and I thought this was wonderful. The last blessing is, "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has contended for us and defended our cause, avenging us by bringing retribution on all our mortal enemies and delivering us from our adversaries. Blessed are you, Lord, who delivers his people from all their adversaries, God who saves." And then on the morning of Purim, like Christmas morning, the Esther scroll is again read in the synagogue, but the mood is lighter because the children come dressed up as the main characters in the story. And it's a bit like a pantomime because whenever Haman's name is mentioned, the children make loud noises using various homemade shakers. So I just love to see that. There are two types of gifts that are sent, food parcels to friends and families, and charitable donations for the poor. I thought that was interesting as well, because I think we might say, well, we'll give the poor food, and we'll give our relatives money, but this is the other way around. I think it's a wonderful idea, the celebration, remembering, as they say in the guideline, it's a vivid reminder that unexpected reversals do happen in history, and that such reversals have a permanent impact on the life of the community of faith who celebrate the powerful presence of God among them. Well, for some people, Christmas is a time of great sorrow. You remember people who are not there. You remember broken homes. You are under great stress and under great strain and under great pressure. And to be honest, Christmas just adds another pressure that you could do without. But you need to remember what Christmas is about. Luke 1:71. He's come to bring salvation from our enemies and from the hand of all who hate us. Psalm 30, verse 11. You turn my wailing into dancing. You remove my sackcloth and you clothe me with joy. You turn my wailing into dancing. Isaiah 61, verse 3. To provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. Do you not despair at times? You despair at the injustice in the world and the cruelty. You despair at the bickering and fighting amongst politicians. You despair at the poverty and the greed. You despair sometimes at yourself, at your own family, at different things. You worry. You cry out to God, and Christmas is about God bringing the oil of joy instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. It's also a day, the day of Purim was a day of giving presents to the poor. One of the things that I find wrong with Christmas in Western culture is that it is a day that people use for overindulgence and greed. And we spend a huge amount of money on ourselves. So yesterday I was in a place and, you know, Santa's there. And, you know, that's a tough job, I think, being Santa in Australia in the middle of summer when you've got to wear all the gear. But you're getting your photograph taken. Now, I understand having the photograph taken with kids. I'm not sure I understand this. There were people queuing up with their groomed dogs to get their dog's photo taken with Santa, because the dog really appreciates that. And the dog believes in Santa and loves Santa. And why? Why? Just think about why we do that and why we spend such ridiculous amounts of money on ourselves. Maybe as Christians we need to redeem the festival by genuinely caring for and spending money on the poor, not just as charity, as a salt for our own conscience or a bit of virtue signaling. For the Jewish people, Purim was a day of deliverance for them, and so they helped the poor. The word, the Purim comes from, the pure word here is not a Hebrew word, which is why it's in brackets and it's being explained. And I think it's wonderful because the pure meant casting lots. And what Haman did was he threw dice to see when all the Jews would be killed. What day will we kill the Jews? Let's throw dice. And the Feast of Purim is saying, it's not in Haman's hands. It's not in Xerxes' hands. God is in control of this whole world. And we need to remember that. When people are going, well, we're going to do this, or people believe in the stars and fates and everything. No, it's not the stars under which you were born that control your life. It's the one who was born under the star. And notice verse 18, also, it was a day of rest. Again, isn't it strange how all these festivals, you're so glad when they're over. You know, there's a song, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. Does anyone really sing that and mean it? You're thinking, thank goodness it's only once a year. I'll be honest, I'm loving being here without all the pressures of Christmas in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm really enjoying it, although I wish I could get a decent Christmas tree, and I look forward to some carols. But I wish it could be Christmas every day. Please no, especially the mums who are doing all the cooking. And of course, you may belong to an enlightened household where dad does more than barbecue, but I doubt it. You've had Christmas. You need rest. Well, you know what God has done? I think this is wonderful. God has given us a day of celebration, a day of joy, a day of renewal, and a day of rest every week. We don't have Christmas every day, but we have it and Easter every Sunday, every Lord's Day. It's why we call it the Lord's Day. And I want to suggest that we really are missing out on something when we lose that. It's part of what we are as a community of God's people, like the Jews remembered Passover and Pentecost, and the Jews remembered Purim. And then it's a day of restoration. Chapter 10, I love this description of Mordecai. He was held in high esteem because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all of the Jews. Haman came to bring evil. Mordecai came to bring good. You are called to work for the welfare of the city and all its people. You're a social worker. You're a doctor. You're a nurse. You're a politician. You're a dustbin man, a refuse man, or whatever it's called. You're doing it not just for yourself, but for the good of the people. Wouldn't it be fantastic if all our politicians genuinely thought like that, instead of thinking they are the people, if they thought we are here to serve, and more than that, we are servants of the living God? Well, that's what Mordecai did. Do you know, I think the lessons of all of this, in the centuries before Christ, the survival of the Jewish people was essential if they were ever to be a church. The book Esther, which relates the story of that survival, is an important part of the Bible for Christians as well. There will always be a Jewish people, and we owe the Jewish people. Do you know what it's like? I do a lot of speaking in different places, and you'll go, and often someone will stand up and introduce it and say, we want to pay respect to the elders of the indigenous tribe that first had this land. I think that's actually a good thing. First of all, I was very cynical when I heard it. It's kind of like guilt, you know, and then I thought, no, this is actually a good thing, and I like that. You know, every time we meet in worship, we need to remember the Jews, because we owe what we have to the Jewish people. There's always a debt we will have to the Jewish people. And if you're here and you're from a Jewish background, I really mean that. I really do mean that. Let me come back to Auschwitz. I've been to Auschwitz, the Holocaust. I didn't want to go. I studied it as part of my university degree. I knew what it was like. I went there. It was utterly horrendous. I do not want to go back. The only way I'll go back is to take somebody who I think could benefit from it. But I stood there and I just thought, if there's no God, this world is hell. There's no escape. Taking God out of the equation doesn't bring justice. I stood there and I thanked the Lord that there is justice. There was a woman from a village where I was minister, the village of Brora in the Scottish Highlands, called Anna Sutherland. I asked her once what her job was because she worked in Sydney. She worked for Christian Witness to Israel. And she said, my job is to go to Bondi Beach and tell Jews about Jesus. And I thought, that sounds a really tough gig. And actually it was in some ways. But she told me once of a time she was in a Jewish cafe here in Sydney and talking to some young women, and they were saying, we don't believe in God. They were Jewish, but they're saying, we don't believe in God because of the Holocaust, because of Auschwitz and Belsen and Dachau. And as she was talking, she wasn't sure what to say. As they were talking, she wasn't sure what to say. And this elderly lady leaned over, tapped on the table, rolled up her arm, showed her Auschwitz tattoo number, and said, I believe in God. It's interesting that people who have suffered the most are the ones who very often it's the suffering that drives them to God. Because where else can you go in the midst of all of that? Jesus the Jew came to fulfill justice and the law. There is a day coming when every knee will bow before Jesus. Chapter 10, verse 1 talks about people coming and bowing before the great emperor, King Xerxes. Well, the promise here is that everyone will bow before Jesus. I think that's the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, here. I was going to say Mr. Morrison, but apparently you call him Scott. Some of you even call him ScoMo. I'm just not used to it. But mind you, we've now got a Prime Minister in the UK who'll be known by his first name, Boris, Mr. Johnson, or whatever. But all of them. I think your Prime Minister knows this. I don't think the British Prime Minister knows this. But I think your Prime Minister knows that ultimately he's accountable to God. And thank God for a Prime Minister who recognizes that. But Putin and Johnson and Trump and Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un and Ramnath Kovind and Merkel and Macron, they all bow before King Jesus. And he's our king. Our loyalty is to him, not primarily to our nationalities. So I leave you with simply this. If you want to know justice, and why wouldn't you? If you want to know days of rejoicing and rest and deliverance, then you need to come to know Jesus Christ. In him is our peace. In him is our joy. And please, this Christmas, please do make it about Jesus. If you take Christ out of Christmas, you're just left with nothing. And if you are a Christian, you've already said that Jesus is Lord. Well, don't just say it. Live it. He's in charge of it all. Don't panic and freak out about everything. Trust him. He's risen. Celebrate him. He is God with us, the hope of glory. And if you're a Christian, you are deeply blessed. You have the greatest gift of all. And if you're not a Christian and you're here, you're invited to receive the greatest gift of all. That's what Christmas is about. That's what the book of Esther is about. May God bless us all.